Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for waiting. All lines have been placed on listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for your questions and comments following the presentation. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the floor over to your host, Ms. Julie Wright. Ms. Wright, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Julie Wright, and I am the Health Systems for Tobacco-Free New York Program Manager with the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Tobacco Control. Health Systems for Tobacco-Free New York grantees are engaging healthcare systems to improve the delivery of guideline concordant care for tobacco dependents through systems and policy change at the organizational level. Health Systems grantees are working throughout New York State to expand the reach of evidence-based smoking cessation interventions. Grantees focus on a higher-level administrative decision-maker to ensure that the providers within that health system they oversee deliver appropriate and aggressive tobacco dependence treatment to its members. Each county has a contractor available to assist your organization. At the conclusion of this call today, please complete the evaluation posted in the upper left corner of the New York State Smokers Quitline site, where you access the materials and information for this call today. If you would like to receive CME credit, KSAC credit, or a certificate of attendance, you must complete the evaluation. Please ensure that the information is legible, as unreadable forms will not be able to be processed. At this time, on behalf of the Health Systems for Tobacco-Free New York's Collaborative Conference Call Workgroup, I would like to welcome you all to today's call, Systems Change to Reduce Tobacco Use in Clinical Setting, the Nuts and Bolts, and introduce our esteemed presenter, Ms. Donna Warner. Ms. Warner is the former managing partner with the Multiple State Collaborative for Health Systems Change and the former director of cessation policy and program development for Massachusetts Tobacco Cessation and Prevention Program. Ms. Warner holds an MA from Harvard University, an MBA from Northeastern University, and a Certificate of Advanced Alcoholism Clinical Skills from Boston University School of Social Work. She currently resides in Rhinebeck, New York, where she is an active participant in lifetime learning, historical preservation, and community projects. Donna, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Julie, and hello, everyone. I would like to thank Pat and her colleagues for inviting me to present today, and although I lived in Boston all my adult life, I now live in the Hudson Valley, so I, too, am a New Yorker. Also, I've worked over the years with many of you in the state and New York City health departments and with the cessation centers, so the presentation today reflects collaborative learning, as well as work in Massachusetts that we did with many different types of healthcare facilities. So let me begin. Here are the topics that I'm going to cover. So why are clinical systems to address tobacco use important? I think we all know that answer, but I'll repeat it. What do we mean by systems change in the clinical setting? Show me a good system. What does one look like? And, well, how do we actually know it works? The forces be with you. It's a little late since Star Wars came out, but as you know from Rob Adsit's presentation a while back, there are many policy and financial system policy pieces that are driving good tobacco intervention, so I won't be covering that. So, and of course, as the cartoon suggests, we're working today in a rapidly changing healthcare environment, and much of that is driven by both technology and finances. So it would not be a surprise to this audience to hear that system work is challenging. It takes time and multiple attempts, sometimes over years, but as we will see, I think it is truly worth it. So next slide. So I do want to mention that this presentation is based on two health systems for which there are published results. I'll showcase the work of Atrius Health and the Louisiana State University Public Hospitals, and I want to credit the leaders of those initiatives who are also the authors of several peer-reviewed publications, which I will, in fact, show you later. So just to name them, Thad Schilling, an MD at Atrius Health. Also, I'm referring to Atrius Health, the specific system called Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates. Dr. Sarah Moody Thomas at Louisiana State University School of Public Health in New Orleans, and Dr. Tom Land at the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts. And some of the slides actually come from their presentations and are in their words, so I'll let you know. So why clinical systems? Well, the healthcare delivery system represents an important strategic opportunity to reduce smoking rates. Clearly, since 70% of tobacco users will see a healthcare provider each year, but especially including those most at risk. In fact, we would be very hard-pressed to find a better population-wide strategy to reach so many tobacco users so effectively. And by strategy, I mean routine systems of intervention, not more intensive individual treatment. And as you'll see from the examples here, with a good system, we can see reductions in prevalence made very rapidly within about 2 years. And on the tobacco, this is my advocacy statement, on the tobacco control program side, we have long advocated for a systems approach to cessation, and we specifically that it have priority status similar to that of smoke-free policies and price increases, and I think we've come a long way there. So what is a system? Okay, we talk about systems on many different levels. Today, I'm talking about a system implemented at the clinical level and that includes multiple components. The ideal system includes not only buy-in from CEOs or chief financial officers, but their leadership in making systems change happen, meaning it's driven by them. A system typically includes a clinical process integrated with EHR screens and prompts to support an agreed-upon workflow. A good system will include monitoring and feedback routinely to the clinical sites, teams, and individual clinicians. And by system, I mean reports that are generated and they also go somewhere, meaning some to the CEO or to the head of quality improvement and so forth. They really do need to go back to individual clinicians as well, and I'll talk more about that. So also the flip side is that today the shift is away from putting the burden on individual clinicians towards a teaming approach. And we've learned from the studies you'll see in this presentation that goals should be set very high. Probably about 90% for both identification and brief interventions. Good systems, once they're in place, can produce these sustained high levels over time. So the last point is that, and I'll come back to this at the end, referrals to in-house counseling or a quit line really ought to be made the way any other referrals are or will soon be made within a clinical system, meaning fully electronic and bidirectional. So show me a good system. Okay. What is a good system? This is a pretty much a quote from Dr. Tom Land. I thought that this kind of summed it up. A good system is one that, when implemented fully, is easier to do than not do. The other thing is that some clinical systems have, or some clinical organizations have pieces of a system in place and may want to try to improve on it, and sometimes trying harder to make something, an existing piece system or pieces of a system work better may not actually be effective. So here's an example. I'm going to show you and walk you through the Atrius Health System. Excuse me. Now, Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates, HVMA, is one big component of a larger Atrius Health System. It's a nonprofit clinical system providing care to just under 400,000 patients at 17 sites. Sometimes they have as many as 20 sites. To give you a sense of the size, Harvard Vanguard has more than 600 physicians and 1,000 healthcare professionals, and they're all engaged in this tobacco intervention system. Harvard Vanguard, as I mentioned, is part of Atrius Health, and this includes six community medical group serving more than a million patients in eastern and central Massachusetts. So the tobacco intervention system I'm going to show you was expanded to all of these organizations, and so it's what I would call a large healthcare organization. Now, whoops, there we go. Okay, so I would like to just tell you the story of Harvard Vanguard, pretty much in Dr. Schilling's words. So here's the story. In 2007, the Harvard Vanguard chief medical officer selected smoking cessation as an important initiative to improve their patient population health. That is, the leadership came from the top, and they appointed Dr. Schilling as an MD champion and the project lead. So their first step was to say, well, they had an Epic system in place for a long time. They said, well, let's review the data in our Epic system so that we can set a quality improvement goal. And here's what they found in Dr. Schilling's words. Before 2007, we had fields in our Epic system to code for smoking and assessment. So the data from our EHR showed that 84% of the patients had a documented smoking status, and 31% of smokers' visits were coded for tobacco assessment / counseling. So the rate of identification was really pretty good. However, what they discovered was that there was no record of evidence-based interventions behind the data. That is, they didn't know what workflows or what clinician behaviors or interventions had actually produced the data. They also could not determine how many smokers received prescriptions for cessation medications. They had no tools in place to support clinicians in conducting routine interventions. As Thad said, we had no academic detailing programs, and we only had a loose affiliation with the Massachusetts Quit Line. Their conclusion, we did not have a system-level or system-wide intervention approach. So they set to task to create one. It started with a set of principles. The intervention that they, and the system they would create must be evidence-based, iterative, and consistent everywhere. It needed to be integrated into daily practice. They needed to provide supports for the clinician at the point of care. They wanted to involve all members of the clinical team, and they do have a team-based clinical arrangement. And they wanted to better leverage community resources like the Quit Line. So this is what they produced. I can, not sure why this isn't clicking. There we go. So the after is what you see here in the diagram. So as you can see, their clinical workflow is team-based. If you look over on the right in the diagram, there is three boxes, gray, yellow, and purple. There is a medical assistant involved, the visit clinician who is a doc or MD, and the APC is an advanced practice clinician, usually a nurse practitioner. So the steps were very simple. Before the clinical visit, the medical assistant asks each patient about their smoking, document status, and verifies or determines readiness to quit. The MA also orders the Quit Line referral right there. The information recorded by the MA is then available immediately in the EHR to the visit clinician, who is then prompted by the EHR to deliver strong advice to quit. And if the patient has indicated ready to quit, the visit clinician, again, an MD, delivers a congratulation, confirms the QuitWorks referral, and offers some support for a quit attempt. The MA actually in this workflow is setting up a follow-up appointment before they even see the doctor. And then the advanced practice clinician, the nurse practitioner, will prescribe meds and then provide some counseling and also confirm the next visit. So this is the protocol, and they put it in place throughout their system. First, on the basis of voluntary participation in a pilot project, and they, so they also introduced some other features. This alone was not enough. So they, for example, created medications decision support, and this is a smoking cessation drug therapy guide that they built into the EHR, and it had the information on the first-line drug options, the costs, and then insurance coverage information, and also, again, a link on how to order a Quitline referral. So most importantly, they developed a method to create reports in real time to track the performance of the teams and the individual providers. So let's take a look now at the components, just to summarize. So their system had a teaming approach. The roles were defined for each of those team members. It was in their job descriptions. The workflow had the scripts and prompts for each step built into it, and the data entry was real-time and required so that all of the information had to be recorded as it occurred, no backfilling, and then again, measurement and feedback. So I want to stop now on the feedback because I think this is pretty typical of how Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates works. What they did here with a feedback system is in keeping with the Harvard Vanguard's culture as a high-performance system. They fine-tune their clinical processes to extract even a small numeric improvement towards a QI goal. So this would not be unusual for them, but it may be unusual in many settings. So they monitor the performance by clinic team and individual clinician monthly on each of the steps. So they provided feedback reports, but they actually, Thad and his assistant, reviewed the performance with each of them on each measure every month. And they also reviewed the patient cases with missing assessments, and they identified staff for coaching so that they could improve assessment and identification rates. And for staff with lower scores, they conducted periodic refreshers on the EHR screens, and then again monitor the progress. So it's this active review process with each team, not simply providing the reports, that for them was critical to performance improvement. And Thad tells a story of reviewing the numbers 1 month and finding a significant dip in tobacco identifications for one team and one of 17 sites. So he and his assistant got in the car and drove over to find out what the source of the problem was. And the MA in that particular team was on maternity leave, so they needed to close that gap. So let me move on now to the question, how do we know it works? So so let's take a look at what was actually done and how did the patients fare. I do want to mention that because so many providers now use electronic records, this has changed the methods that analysts can use to evaluate process and measure health improvements. So Atrius Health and the Department of Public Health under Tom Land's leadership partnered to evaluate specifically systems change, not just the system, but the systems change aspect implementation at Harvard Vanguard. And to do this, they obtained permission to access encounter-level data for 310,000-plus adult patients at all 17 clinics for about a five-year period. In other words, millions of them. And by the way, this is not easy to do, but it can be done. So here you see spaghetti. So what is this spaghetti? It's actually a graph that plots the rollout of the tobacco intervention program across all 17 clinical sites. Now, on the left-hand scale, the vertical scale, is the percentage rate of identification of smokers. And across the bottom, it goes from January 2008, its time, through July of 2010. And what you're seeing on the lines is the rate of identification, and as it increased in some cases dramatically, in some cases slowly, and so on, over the nearly two-year period. Okay, so what you see here are the green sites on the top of the graph started with high rates of identification and remained high. The orange sites in the middle, you can see, increased their rates of identification in different ways over between 2008 and 2010. And then you have those blue sites on the bottom where the rates of identification never changed and remained low. So we see the rollout, but the next step was to analyze the impact of the system change. So how do we know when the system has in fact changed? That was an analytic task that Tom undertook with his colleagues, and they defined it as the first month when more than half of all office visits at a given site included identification and the rate never dropped below 50% and never dropped and stayed up there for at least a year. So using this definition, this is what we found, or what they found. There was a dramatic and significant increase in identification for 12 of the 17 sites, as well as a significant increase in the rate of intervention. One thing I want to mention is that when those rates, the slide showed rates of identification, but the assessment went hand in hand. So those assessment rates in the 12 of the 17 sites also went up to an average 82.5%, quite high. So these are the findings that were made, were feasible to do because there were both sites that did incur systems change and some that did not. So decreases in smoking prevalence were 40% greater at sites that achieved the systems change as I defined it, or as they defined it in the analysis. The other important thing is that for those people who were in those sites where systems changed occurred, their chances of quitting increased by 2.6% per occurrence. That means if you came in and saw the and received an intervention month one, your chances increased more than 2.5%. If you came back in 3 months, another additive 2.6% increase in your chances of quitting until you would quit. For patients, and this is the sort of unusual finding, for patients with a recent history of smoking, the likelihood of an office visit for a smoking-related diagnosis actually decreased by 4.3% on an annualized basis where systems change had occurred. So what does this mean? It means that the patients were getting better. So we can consider a reduction in office visits as an indicator of improved health. And for Harvard Vanguard, this 4.3% in a large system meant a reduction of about 1,000 office visits saved or real capacity and financial savings, particularly because Harvard Vanguard is an organization that was operating under payment for health rather than fee for service. So now, the next question is Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates and Atrius Health a one-trick pony? Is it the only place in the world where this could have happened? Harvard Vanguard is a largely suburban system with a largely white, maybe middle-class population. Well, here is another system that I want to mention, and that's Louisiana State University's Tobacco Control Initiative. Well before Harvard Vanguard implemented its systems change to reduce tobacco use, Dr. Moody Thomas was working on a very large initiative to introduce systems change in 10 Louisiana public hospitals. And as you can see, this is a very diverse system with primarily low-income population, largely uninsured, and you see the stats there on the slide, and more than 50% African American. So we did, Tom Land and Dr. Moody Thomas and her staff did a comparable analysis to that for the one done at Harvard Vanguard, and again, they obtained millions of encounter records from those delivery systems and found very similar results to Atrius Health. In other words, reductions, very high rates of identification and intervention followed by reductions in patient population smoking status. Here is a picture. Actually, I had some animation, but it doesn't seem to be working here. But in the background is a screen from the LSU's electronic record system clinical inquiry. But what I especially wanted to show you was this pop-up screen, which has a graph of the patient's smoking history. Now, retaining longitudinal data on patient smoking status as opposed to overwriting it is really vital to evaluating changes over time in both patient population smoking prevalence and health improvements. And you can see the screen right there how that graph of an individual patient's tobacco use could be helpful, obviously, to the clinician. That is an interesting feature. So if you want to know more about the studies that were done on both of these systems, these are the peer-reviewed journal articles. On the left is the study of the Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates system with Tom Land and is the lead author with Nancy Rigotti and others. On the left and on the right, a few years later, 2015, is the analysis of the Louisiana State University Public Hospital System with Sarah Modi Thomas as the lead author. So I'm going to also suggest if you have questions about the analyses or the study population, the methods, please check out the articles. It would be much better. I'm not going to try to answer questions about that. It's really too technical for this presentation. So to conclude, I want to just mention a few of the practical lessons learned that came from the Atrius staff, project staff, and from the LSU project staff. So here on the right is a picture of the timeline for the LSU systems change project, and I just want to mention that it didn't take them 8 years to do this. What it shows is, in fact, a system that has evolved over time and improved over time, especially as their electronic records evolved. The other thing it will show, if you look carefully or read the article or a case study I'll mention in a minute, they spent a lot of time on the front-end work getting the buy-in and also doing interviews and patient surveys. They did a lot of front-end work before they put this system in place in all 10 hospitals. But the slide also has bullets there that confirm what you already know. Even under the best circumstances, systems change can take a year or longer, and most likely longer. Even where we have provided funding, the Department of Public Health, to plan and implement systems work and provide TA, there are always stumbling blocks. There's a legal issue, a data element issue, a technical or IT issue, or some resistance. So it does take time. Now, from Atrius, we've already gone over this. We certainly learned that physician involvement is critical, but their system with a team-based approach puts a lot of responsibility on the medical assistants, and the physician involvement is critical but minimal. They also had the performance feedback and the partnership with the Quitline. What I put in red is really, I think, a really important lesson learned from them, that they just simply made the right thing to do the easy thing to do. And I also want to linger for a minute on the relationship between Atrius Health and the Massachusetts Quitline. Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates was an early adopter of our fax referral program, in fact, going back to 2002. But as the use of their Epic system matured and along about 2009, they informed us that the quit line was the only remaining fax program that they used and that we at DPH needed to offer an electronic referral or they just wouldn't use the quit line anymore. The upshot of that was that we did implement a fully electronic system. Atrius was the first to use it. And what you see in the graph there is the increase in referral volume pre-e-referral launch and post-e-referral launch, the post being the solid blue bars. What you see there is the rate of referrals compared with a year before when fax referrals were in place. So it increased dramatically over the previous year in terms of the number of referrals, and they also doubled within a couple of months when we started. So that was an important improvement for Atrius and Harvard Vanguard. Now, from lessons learned from LSU are very practical. Dr. Sarah Moody Thomas really speaks strongly about finding win-win-win approaches and seizing sort of critical opportunities. She felt that the win for their program, the Tobacco Control Initiative, was that when they moved into the public hospitals, they seized on an opportunity to integrate the Tobacco Control Initiative into a chronic disease program already underway in the hospitals. So they found that point of entree. It was a win for patients. In her case, they had tobacco settlement money that covered the cost of treatment. So they were able to make evidence-based treatments, counseling, quit line, and medications available as a standard of care to all patients. And it was a significant win for the healthcare organization. It helped the facilities to meet accreditation and to obtain recognition from the Joint Commission, National Committee on Quality Assurance, and, of course, meaningful use had long been met there before meaningful use. So those are some helpful, I think, advice. And the other from Dr. Moody Thomas are these three: to be practical, persistent, and to be patient. In terms of practical, her view is that there are so many interconnected parts, but synchronicity is not always possible to get everything moving in the same direction at the same time, but you move what you can when you can. And being persistent, she points out that actually, given any opportunity, momentum can be lost or something's going to go wrong. So you can use data to keep the pressure on. And also to be patient, as I mentioned with the timeline there a couple slides back, the system's change in their case was gradual and was very front-end loaded in terms of buy-in planning and doing some pilot testing in particular before they rolled out the program across all 10 hospitals. But what happens is you reach a tipping point and then suddenly it all gets set in motion. And as she says, the rewards can be very great. So keeping the eye on the prize, the critical success factors, organization commitment, and sponsorship by the upper level management certainly not only helps, I think it's personally, I think it's a requirement. Integration of tobacco measures into the internal QI processes puts it right where it belongs into the heartbeat of the system. And the certified electronic record really should have templates that provides decision support and certainly reflects the public health service guidelines. Hopefully it will generate reminders and easily provide feedback reports. And more importantly, that data are stored in that EHR for process reporting and for extracting longitudinal data for outcome reporting. Then, and finally, the integration with either internal tobacco treatment services or community resources, be they on the ground or through the quit line. Hopefully, again, that these evolve so that they are in a fully electronic form that works smoothly and in a bidirectional way. So lastly, if you're not up to reading journal articles, I highly recommend some brief case studies that are available on the CDC Office for on Smoking and Health website. I put the website, the actual web page, on the bottom here of the slide. I worked with the Office on Smoking and Health to prepare a frequently asked questions document on health systems change, where it says here, using health systems change to increase tobacco cessation. That's only a couple of pages. And then we did a case study in a Q&A, question and answer format, with both Harvard Vanguard and Louisiana State University. So these are very brief, again, 2 to 3 page stories about both these systems with the findings, only in very readable form. And I suggest you might use them if you want to hand these off to people that you need to convince or to show them good examples. I think these might be very helpful for that. So please do go on that website, and there you'll also see another case study on community health centers and tobacco intervention systems and the work that Rob Adsit did on academic detailing in tobacco cessation. Check it out. Now, I am almost finished here, and I wanted to mention that while I was preparing this presentation, I was reading the Sunday Times a couple of weeks ago, and this article caught my eye, and it's an article, as you see on the bottom in the Times, How Measurement Fails Us, by Robert M. Wachter, and he is the author of a book called The Digital Doctor, Hope, Hype, and Harm at the Dawn of Medicine's Computer Age. And by the way, I just want to point out that I love the little cartoon up here in the corner, patient-centered care. I think I have certainly had this experience of going in to see my doc, and I never actually saw them. I saw their back in the computer. That's an exaggeration. But, you know, while we're talking about mining millions of data elements from electronic records, and we're talking about quality improvement, there certainly is a debate going on, and there certainly has been concern with the proliferation of quality measures required and otherwise, and which ones actually are attached to solid research that shows that they result in improved health. So I mention that because in this article, the gentleman cited the work of someone, Dr. Donabedian, who was reported to be the father of quality measures. And this author asked him in an interview just before the gentleman's death about what he truly felt made for quality. And this was his answer, the secret of quality is love. So I think we know what that means in terms of patient care. However, with respect to tobacco, we are, you know, very fortunate that for smoking cessation, the evidence is so very clear and abundant that we know that efforts to implement systems change will pay off. And in fact, tobacco systems, clinical systems to address tobacco use actually can lead the way in demonstrating what were stage 3 meaningful use goals now on hold, that is improved health. This is probably where in the area where you have the best shot in the shortest amount of time to show that ultimately substantial savings will accrue from the decreased utilization of healthcare services related to tobacco use. That was the finding from Harvard Vanguard, and I hope there are people out there who have the opportunity to mine some of these encounter records to replicate the kinds of studies that were done on these two systems. So that's it from me. Thank you. And now I'm going to turn it back to over to Pat Bax, who is the Outreach and Marketing Coordinator, Roswell Park Cancer Institute. Pat?
Thank you so much, Donna, for your outstanding and very informative presentation. I think there's so many takeaway messages that you gave for us, and for that, I thank you. I want to welcome our new and our returning participants who are joining us today. Today, Donna addressed necessary components of a successful health system. And the New York State Smokers Quitline, based here at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, in today, a sunny and balmy Buffalo, is available. We're available statewide to assist in providing free evidence-based cessation services and resources. Our quit coaches provide support and help to your patients or your clients as they become and stay tobacco-free. And to access our services, tobacco users can call the quit line or they can be referred through a provider referral program. And we offer free motivational coaching, a two-week starter kit of patches, ongoing support, numerous resources, as I'm sure you've seen on our website at nysmokefree.com. We have access to social media, text messaging, and our online smoke-free community. So I do invite you to explore our site for valuable ready-to-use tools, such as our referral program and our downloadable materials, which do include fact sheets for those of you that address chronic diseases. If you are interested in learning more about a referral process, you can call us at 1-866-697-8487, and we'd be happy to talk with you, especially about our policy-driven, system-wide opt-to-quit referral program. On behalf of the New York State Smokers Quitline, thank you for referring your patients to us, and we look forward to assisting you with cessation policy and systems change. We also have exciting news from the New York State Bureau of Tobacco Control. The Bureau will soon be launching a media campaign, which will be targeting healthcare providers, urging them to help smokers overcome their nicotine addiction by treating it with medication and counseling. And the $1 million two-year campaign is funded through a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention grant, and it reminds providers that when using both medication and counseling, it can help their patients quit smoking, the success rates increase dramatically. The campaign ads will be featured largely on medical websites, on social media, and they'll be targeting physicians, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and in various out-of-home venues. We invite you to stay tuned for the upcoming campaign, which you'll be seeing and hearing more about very soon. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to our operator, Wes, and we will open it up for questions and answers.
Certainly, the floor is open for your questions. If you have a question or comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. Okay, there's a question from Robin Clark. Robin, the floor is yours.
You said the ultimate goal is increased savings. It's not the savings of a human life. Do you realize what you said? I'm quoting.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm referring to healthcare cost reduction.
We're not talking about healthcare costs. We're talking about human beings.
That's that. That, of course, is the health improvement and saving lives is the very ultimate. Is the first.
Okay, you can backtrack all you want. You said it. You said the ultimate goal was increased savings. And I'm sorry. This is not the kind of thing that I thought would I would get on a webinar with New York Smoking. I thought that the people who were involved with New York Smoking were really interested in the patients and helping them quit to save their health, not about ultimate savings. And that, to me, is offensive.
Well, I'm so sorry that that is how it, and I'm looking at the last slide, that there is a focus on savings from decreased utilization of healthcare services related to tobacco use. Obviously, I've talked about increasing quit rates and improving the health of patients throughout the presentation. That is clearly the aim of these efforts is to reduce.
I have a question for you. Have you ever been a clinician? Have you ever been a clinician?
Yes, I have.
And so you've worked with people who were trying to quit smoking?
Oh, my goodness, yes, I have, including myself. I am very, very familiar with the challenges of...
For your next webinar, perhaps you might want to focus on that and focus on those of us who are also clinicians in the field who are dealing with people one-on-one and not saying to them, oh, it's an increased savings to your hospital. No, no, no.
I'm sorry that's the takeaway. Clearly, we are talking about saving lives, improving the population health of all the people in these systems as well as the individual patient's health.
And, you did not address that in this webinar. You didn't address that one-on-one.
Okay.
The one-on-one never addressed.
All right.
Addressed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Patricia Hepburn. Patricia, the floor is yours.
Hi. My question was, can you give me more information on the CDC grant information for the smoking program?
I think you're best to address your question either to the New York State Department of Health, to the program that funds the quit line in New York State, or directly to the Centers for Disease Control, the Office on Smoking and Health. I'm not the best person to speak about their grants.
Okay, thanks.
And just to follow up for a minute, I'm going to say that I've worked in this field for over 15 years, that I worked with the University of Massachusetts Medical School for a number of years. We started the certification program at UMass Medical School to help clinicians to become tobacco treatment specialists if they wished. We offered many, many clinician training programs, but I also was an addictions counselor myself, too. So I'm afraid that the purpose of this presentation was a focus on the systems-level interventions, and so that may have, unfortunately, not covered the whole landscape of tobacco treatment or the individual treatment efforts and individual cessation efforts. So anyway, Nick, is there another question?
Yes, there is, but as a reminder for a question or comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from Jason Muscoff. Jason, the floor is yours.
Hi, this is actually Tom Della Porta. I'm in the same room with Jason Muscoff at the University of Rochester. And
yeah.
Thank you very much for your excellent presentation. But I was wondering, when you set up the email process or the electronic notification for refer to quit, what type of technical barriers or problems did you encounter, and what resources did you need to solve those problems?
Well, this is a kind of I'll give you the short answer. I was going to say there's kind of a long answer. In Massachusetts, we were fortunate to have access to a flexible translator model that was already built so that we were able to use this universal translator model to connect the Epic system to the QuitLines database without doing a lot of hardwired changes to the EMR. And in that process with Atrius and later with other sites, it takes time. It takes a whole village at the clinical site, including the obviously clinical leadership to map out the clinical workflow, including the specific steps in the referral process, who does what to whom, and to also look at all the data elements that get transferred out to the quit line, let's say, or to any other community-based resource for which an electronic referral is going to be made. And so, again, it too, just that loop of referral between the EHR and the clinician on one side and the quit line on the other can take, 5 or 6 months and involve, again, the clinical side, the IT side, and the people who are concerned about the data reports. If you want more information, there is a very big project going on in Massachusetts to do community referrals from about 50 clinical sites to various community-based programs, again, using this universal translator model. It was funded by the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and the system that they're using will be made available to other public health departments. Long answer.
Donna, thank you very much. That does help a lot. The reason I asked the question is many clinics in our region of New York State are leery about sending patient information electronically. They're naturally concerned about the confidentiality of that information. And so
all of the kind of systems they're working on, the connections that are being made in Massachusetts are being made within that patient, the privacy, the security issues. And many of these systems are already working on those issues through their other referral systems. So definitely, you have to have the right people at the table.
Yes.
It should, in our case, or in the case of Massachusetts, is certainly being integrated with their existing processes for exchanging data, whether it be for lab reports or any other referral.
I see. Thank you very much.
It's not a standalone.
Okay.
Thank you. Again, as a reminder, for a question or comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from Jill Doberstein. Jill, the floor is yours.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for your presentation. My name is Jill, and I'm from Essentia Health all the way over in Duluth, Minnesota.
Whoa.
I know. Not a New Yorker. But working on systems change, we have a very large system, 17 hospitals, 67 clinics in Minnesota and North Dakota and Wisconsin.
Oh, I know. I think I know the system, yes.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I've worked with Clearway, Minnesota, and also the North Dakota. So,
perfect. Great. Mm-hmm. So in looking at systems change, I think probably the biggest sort of barrier I have is around the referral process. And
okay, it looks like that caller dropped. Maybe they'll dial back in.
Okay.
But as a reminder, for a question or comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. Okay, the next question comes from Megan France. Megan, the floor is yours.
Hi, thank you very much for the wonderful presentation, Donna. I was wondering if you will be sharing the slides with everybody.
I believe that Pat Bax will be sharing those, and if they haven't already.
Great.
And
Megan and Donna, just wanted to mention that, yes, the slides are posted at nysmokefree.com, the collaborative conference call tab. And if you go right on the left-hand side, you'll see Donna's information, her bio, as well as a PDF of the slides. And I also created a black and white copy of the slides in a handout format that you can copy and you can print for your information.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you again. As a reminder, for a question or comment, please press 7 on your telephone keypad. The next question comes from Mary Duran. Mary, the floor is yours. Mary, the floor is yours.
Yes, this is Mary Doran from Metro Plus, and I am new with this. It's very exciting. I enjoyed your presentation very much, Donna. And Pat has been a huge inspiration. I have one question, and I don't know if it's appropriate. When the medical website is posted, how do we get our providers ushered to that? I think you mentioned there's going to be a whole new healthcare provider bureau, a $1 million campaign. Did I understand that correctly?
Pat will answer that question.
Hey, yes. Pat, I owe you like 5 calls.
Hi. Thank you for your question. Yes, the campaign will be launched, and the ads will be targeting the healthcare providers to really encourage them to talk with the patients, take time to really tell them that quitting tobacco use is the best thing they can do for them, for their health. So that should be coming out in at least a month, maybe a little bit longer.
And, Pat, how could we, Metro Plus, best assure that our providers are part of this? What's the easiest fashion or mechanism to try and make this happen? And we could talk offline. I don't know if this is something other plans will have questions on.
Certainly. Certainly, you can feel free. Anyone on the call can feel free to email me at patricia.bax@roswellpark.org. If you have questions, we will be posting the campaign information on our website at nysmokefree.com, so you'll see information. We'll also have information on the campaign on our social media, so stay tuned for that as well.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. And, Donna, I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question, Wes, if there is one more question out there.
Okay, the final question comes from Priti Bangia. Priti, the floor is yours.
Thank you for an excellent presentation, Donna. I just had one question, actually, for you with regards to, this is American Heart Month, and my question was with regards to the National Million Hearts Campaign and if there's any consideration at a national level to roll smoking cessation, which is the one of the sort of tenets of the Million Hearts Campaign, to kind of encourage this message of smoking cessation throughout the country, if there's any link between those two?
Well, I would hope so, and it is certainly one of the four prongs of the Million Hearts Campaign. And in some states, again, I'm no longer working in Massachusetts, so but usually at this, and again, of course, we should see this coordination happening at the national and state levels. And usually within our Department of Health, there were many efforts over time to make sure that we were integrated into the other public health programs, including Million Hearts, so that the tobacco cessation side of the program went in with those working on heart disease, you know, and other chronic disease issues. So hopefully you would see that within your Department of I don't work in New York either, so Department of Health, but you should be able to see that level of coordination at the State Department of Health level. I don't know if Pat or anyone has any comment on that for New York State.
Yes, we do through the Bureau of Tobacco Control and also through the Quit Line and through the statewide health systems for tobacco-free New York programs. We do work directly with the Million Hearts Campaign, so there is some collaboration with those efforts.
And, Pat, this is Julie. I just want to add with the New York State Department of Health that part of the new media campaign that you had mentioned that was focused around providers, we hope to be able to incorporate that into this month, which would be Heart Health Month, and incorporate that into that initiative. And additionally, I just want to reemphasize what a great presentation that we had today. I appreciate Donna, and I just want to reiterate the importance with the New York State Department of Health initiatives that work around the triple aim, that really focus on better health for their patients, better quality of care in the treatment of their patients, and the overall lower health care costs as a result of these through the various initiatives we're working on, be it the prevention agenda, be it the state health initiative plan, be it the Medicaid delivery system reform incentive payment program, or the population health improvement program. So that triple aim always does remain at the core of those initiatives to help improve the overall health of our community. So with that, Pat, I will turn it back to you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Julie. Thank you, Wes, for managing the Q&A. And on behalf of the Collaborative Conference Call Work Group, thank you. A very special thank you, Donna. You did an excellent presentation, and we really appreciate you sharing your time and your expertise to help all of our participants in working towards a more effective systems change. We look forward to having all of you join us for our next call on June 1st. It seems a far time away, but it'll be here before we know it. And please be sure to complete your evaluation by February 12th in order to receive your credits. The evaluation link can be found directly on our webpage at nysmokefree.com under the Collaborative Conference Call. It's posted on the left-hand column, and make sure that you complete that by 2/12. We will be posting the recording after the evaluations are completed, and that will be available to you as well to access for future use. Remember, we're here to assist you with all your health systems change work, and we thank you again. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. We appreciate your participation. You may now disconnect your line at this time.